auditorium where a merchandise exhibition was going on that evening. Anyway, Joe's down there in the gym when suddenly he glanced at the doorway and saw this little boy crying. "What's the matter?" Joe asked. The youngster, gasping for words between sobs, said he had been told there was a policeman in the basement. Joe, with back-turned thumb, indicated that he was a cop. "They stole my bike," the child said. "Who?" said Joe. The little boy shook his head. He didn't know, but it was a brand-new bike. It was a red and white Schwinn, and he'd waited a long time to get it, and now it was gone. Joe said, "How old are you, boy?" The boy said, 12. The officer smiled inside. That was a cherished bicycle in just about every boy's life. But this one, more than likely, would never be recovered. Big crowd upstairs, clean getaway. Joe tried to explain that as gently as possible to the youngster, who nonetheless insisted on recounting what had happened. He and a friend had ridden their bikes to the Columbia Bazaar, had spent the late afternoon roaming among the exhibits and partaking of the free candy offered by some of the merchants. When it was time to go home, the boys returned to the spot where they'd chained their bicycles. The friend's bike was still there, but the shiny new Schwinn was just too much temptation for somebody. The chain had been cut. The bike was gone. Someone said there was a police officer downstairs, so the little boy had gone downstairs. "But if you can't help me get my bike back," the child blurted through angry tears, "I'm going to find him, and I'm going to find out who took it, and I'm going to beat him up." It was right then that Officer Joe Martin's inner smile turned outward. "Listen," he told the little lad, "before you start fighting somebody, maybe you'd better learn how." Now the youngster is silent. The last tear still trickled down his face. But they'd stop flowing now. "What do you mean, learn how to fight?" he repeated. Joe nodded and then added, "I'll show you. Let's abbreviate the rest of the story." That October 1954 began an intriguing lifelong friendship between a half-pint crime victim and the cop in the basement. The two would meet down there in the gymnasium often after that night, Joe teaching the basics that he had learned long ago. And much to Joe's surprise, the little boy was a quick study. Although the latter soon forgot his original reason for wanting to learn to fight, there would be other shiny bicycles in the youngster's life, but there would never be another Joe Martin. So in a way, this mention today is a love letter to the Joe Martins everywhere. Realizing that big hurts sometimes come in small packages, you guys give your time, your heart, when the world isn't watching, because someday it might be. And it was for a weeping, whining boy of 12. Because he grew into a tall, strong man under the guidance and with the encouragement of a cop named Joe Martin, who became the forever pal of the man that child became, Cassius Marcellus Clay, Muhammad Ali. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Good afternoon. I'm going to let the music go down a little bit there. Maybe I came in too soon. Good afternoon. Barry's out today. It's Eric Gorm. I have Michael Allen Woody here. Or Aaron, sorry. I'm messing up your name. I know. I'm messing up first right off the bat.
There you go. I'm leaving. This is outrageous. I'm going back to my trailer. This is ridiculous.
But yeah, Barry's out. We're doing a kind of a get out to vote show. We just had the chair of the Republican Party on. We now have a past candidate. You were Congress?
Yeah, for Congress.
And and just kind of watchdog. I hear you a lot in South County. It's good to have you here in North County talking. I think you.
Well, it's good to invite me up here. You never do.
Wow.
Why? You never do. I was like, hey, let me send a text message to Eric. Hey, Eric, what are you doing? He's typing me back.
All right.
And then the bubbles come up on my screen. Then it deletes. Like, oh, you're ignoring me.
But again, yeah, we will be talking about the election. I just want to put the phone number back out there again. So if you like to call in, it's 238-KPRL, 238-5775, and talk about the election. We were just kind of in here kind of talking Harris.
You know, before we get to that, I want to point something out real quick because Randall Jordan is in here. Randall's an amazing guy. I've always loved him to death for years. He has a smartphone now. Now, I'm giving everybody a background on this because everybody's saying,
well, he hasn't had it for very long.
No, exactly. So I don't know if he knows how it works yet. But here's the deal. You know, in all the years that I've known him, everybody else, we're all texting each other, you know, sending JPEGs and PDFs and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and with Randall, it's like, well, how do you get a hold of Randall? Well, let me see. Let me send him a text message. And it pings back some, you know, MSG dot dot, you know, 00550. It does not go through. It's like, well, what is this? And finally, I got a hold of him one day. And I said, Randall, what's the deal here? What's the deal with your text messages? He said, well, I got a flip phone. And he showed it to me one day. It belongs in the Smithsonian. And that's the thing, that phone. So thank you, Randall, for getting a smartphone. So now you can be in touch with the rest of us. We appreciate it. It's so appreciated.
It was pretty amazing. I think it was about maybe a year, maybe less than a year ago. I remember he's like, I got a smartphone now.
Yeah, that's
I think I was in a meeting. We both have our phones sitting here. Yeah. I think the same thing happened. He put his phone down. I was like, whoa. You know, he got a big phone now. It doesn't flip open. So
wow, that's pretty stunning for him. I got to give it to him. I'll give him that one.
Yeah, he got, you know, he's got a lot going on. He's been a regional chair now too. So maybe it just, you know, push came to shove. Too many people trying to get a hold of you. I mean, he might have figured out that text is a little easier because you can still read what people are saying.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like you text and I'd look at it and I put my phone back down and.
I'm loved. I can feel the love here, but Kamala Harris,
it's an interesting subject, isn't it?
I think you know, let me set aside the partisanship of me being a conservative for one second. Let me just try to say this objectively. She has ran, and her people have ran, one of the most failed races I've ever seen. I mean, the tone of her campaign is not meeting the moment. And I know you and I have had this conversation about what's called meeting the moment when you run for office. In the past, when you run for president, you've had to meet the moment. Past history has shown us that when JFK ran, he met the moment. When FDR ran, he met the moment. When Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, you know, setting aside your political...
Whether you like them or not, they
met the moment for when they were running for office, and they understood that. But when it comes to Kamala Harris, here you've got serious problems going on across the United States. And the only people who are claiming that these serious problems are not taking place are those people who are desperately trying to look at Excel spreadsheets and look at things like, you know, stock investments, you know, portfolios and whatnot, and say, well, the stock market is up to this point, you know, yada, yada, yada. But that's not middle America.
No, it's not Main Street.
And what they're not seeing is the frustration of knowing where their gas prices are at today, or where what their grocery bills are like, and how difficult it is to make ends meet. A lot of people out there who are making the claim that the economy is doing well, they live in a world of, like you and I. Okay, you know, if you asked me up and said, you know, if you called me and said, hey, listen, let's go out and get a bite to eat. Okay, we go out and get a bite to eat and not really think that much of it. Let me tell you how the rest of America lives. The rest of America says, okay, before we make a decision to go get a bite to eat, let me see if it's in my budget.
Right.
Okay. And they don't understand that because Kamala Harris has never lived in that world or even understands that world. She has spent her entire life growing up shielded from that. So, you know, when she says, hey, the economy is doing well, yeah, she's talking in terms of, well, yeah, you own this amount of property, you have this much of investments, and your investments in Apple computers or whatever on the stock market has gone up, you know, 42% in the last 2 years or whatever. So yeah, the economy is quote doing well, and you got your big tax break because you bought a Tesla and whatever. The rest of us are sitting there saying, okay, this gas price, it's now costing me, you know, $70-$80 to fill up a tank of gas. And they're saying, okay, well, gas prices are coming back down. So we started at $2.50,
right?
Went up to about $6. Now we're back down to $4.80, and they're saying, look, things are going well. It's like, no.
And inflation has, you know, it's balancing out now, but yeah, it doesn't mean the prices still aren't high.
Right, exactly.
And I find it interesting because you got that, and, you know, what I hate when I heard her say was, you know, things, I wouldn't have done anything different.
Oh my gosh.
Than Joe Biden. But I'm going to fix everything. And it's like, well, which is it? And,
you know. Okay. When she did her debate with Donald Trump, I believe her, no, I know for a fact, her first question was, are we better off today than we were 4 years ago? Now, anybody running for president, or for that matter, running for reelection of any, you know, local leadership position, mayor, governor, et cetera, that's going to be your first question from every reporter. Are we better off today than we were 4 years ago? I mean, mm-hmm. that's common. And what killed me on this is that when that question came up, I sat there, you know, plowing down my bucket of popcorn and watching the TV screen and thinking, oh my gosh, you can't even answer that basic question.
Right.
You know, are we better off than we were 4 years ago? The funny of it to me was that, one, she had to know the question was coming, for mm-hmm. gosh sakes. I mean, you know, that's if her or her handlers didn't know that, then everybody deserves to be fired right there. the second one is there actually was an answer for her to give, you know, strategically. And it's like I said, let me put on my, you know, be strategic for 1 second hat. It's that she should have said, okay, she should have said, 4 years ago today, we were in the middle of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Okay, 4 years ago today, here was the unemployment rate. 4 years ago today, blah, blah, blah. There was a way to answer that.
Right.
Now, a lot of people would have seen that, yeah, but the pandemic was involved in all. But there was an answer that could have been given. And the fact that she couldn't even answer that basic question. And in fact, when she was done talking, the moderator even had to say, okay, you really haven't answered the question. Are we not better off? And she's right. still going to answer the question. And the moment that happened is the moment I looked at the television screen and I said, it's over. You lost.
Right. Yeah. And I think, yeah, I if you look at the last month for her, it hasn't been real good. And I think only fails in comparison to me watching anything in the near, not too far in the past would be Hillary, because Hillary sure. just thought it was supposed to be handed to her.
She
didn't have to run. It was her turn to be president. And I don't think Harris believes that, but it's just a horrible campaign.
Oh my gosh. And here's the thing with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, 4, 6, and 8 weeks out from the election day, a lot of her staff people and a lot of her political people that were working on her campaigns had already gone to Washington, had rented and or purchased homes out there, condos, apartments, etc., had already moved to Washington. They were so confident of a victory, they had already sold their homes. They'd already moved back there. They'd already made plans for the next 4 years. They had furnished apartments. They had everything ready to go, and they did it based on polling that we now know is grossly inaccurate. They did it on arrogance. They did it on a misunderstanding. And the interesting thing about that was I remember my parents at the time were on vacation, and this was about, oh my gosh, probably about 3 weeks before the election. They were on vacation back east. And they were driving all through the northeastern part of the United States, not New York, but it was like, you know, New Hampshire, Connecticut, you know, all those mm-hmm. beautiful states up there. And they said something interesting to me. They called me and they said, you know what? We've been driving for days out here. And I said, yeah. They said, you know what's interesting? I said, what's that? We have yet to see one Hillary Clinton sign. We see Trump signs all over the place in 2016. They're everywhere, but no Clinton signs, even though she was leading in the polls.
Right.
But there were no signs for her. And I remember them calling me and telling me that and thinking, okay, is there, you know what, this might be really interesting on election night after all. And, you know, I have to admit, on election night, I was surprised at the results.
Right.
I really was. I truly thought because I was going by just basic statistics from Real Clear Politics and et cetera, taking the average of everything. I thought, okay, Donald Trump won't win. Hillary Clinton will win because it's in all the numbers and polling, et cetera, et cetera. I sat there that night watching the results come in, and after about an hour, I thought, oh my God, he's going to win this.
Right.
I was so far wrong.
Well, what's interesting too on the polls is that what I've been noticing, even locally, I've listened to folks, you know, and basically he's discrediting the polls now because Trump jumped ahead, and there's, oh, well, there's all these bogus polls that the Republicans put in there, and they're aggregating them and this, that, and the other thing. And I haven't really followed the polls that closely. Probably in 12 years, I started losing a lot of faith in the polls about 12 years ago. And this may be horrible. I was talking to Randall about this, but I started looking at the betting lines because that's the house's money. It's the house's money.
Yeah.
And they don't want to lose.
No, right? They don't.
And so if, you know, it amazes me, and I haven't looked this week. Last week, Trump was at 14 points.
Really?
Yeah. So that's the house's money. If Harris was, wins, yeah, and he's up 14 points, the payout's very large for her win.
Yeah.
So if you really believe in her and you think she's going to win, I guess you better go run to the gambling, you know, put down your bet, because this is the house's money and they want to keep it and they want to make more money off of that money. And so I find that interesting that they think he's overwhelmingly going to take these swing states.
Oh, yeah. And I think he will, too, because, you know, what is misunderstood about liberal politics? Liberal politics tends to break us into categories, whether it be by skin color, culture, social strata, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's generally how it works the liberal side of things. They see different subgroups. And in essence, the political strategy on the Democrat side is to say, here's the subgroup you belong to, and you're a victim, and here's why you're a victim, because you belong to that subgroup, and here's why you need to join us. Mm-hmm. In essence, feel sorry for yourself. You belong to this category. Feel sorry for yourself. Right. Vote for us.
Okay. And I think you're seeing that fall apart.
Yeah. And there was a generation where that basic core strategy, it worked. It did. Admittedly, it did work.
It did well, yeah.
It did, because, you know, there was a generation that was coming back in, 40, 50 years ago, that was saying, hey, enough is enough. I'm tired of being treated differently because I'm black or whatever. And there's a legitimate argument for that. You know, I think anybody who claims that, you know, we have no racism in this country, zero racism doesn't exist, it's a fallacy. That's not true. You know, we have evidence of that. But setting that all aside, but that basic core strategy, people have become not just tired of it, but they have understood that the issues here are far more complex than that simple strategy. Now, the problem that Kamala Harris has with this is that she feels, and her people feel, that she's a woman. I think she's black. I say this in terms of is that I've seen the different reports where she has said different things and made different claims. But
yeah,
okay, it's safe to say that she is a woman who doesn't identify as white.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
So, but what she has failed to understand is that there are so many communities out there who have gotten wise to the idea of saying, you know, I'm going to vote for you because of your sex, or the category you belong to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have gotten tired of that. People realize that doesn't cut it.
Right.
And what they're looking for is results at this point. And especially as frustrated as people are, you know, when you take a look at Donald Trump's administration for 4 years, and you take a look at the administration of Joe Biden, and you take a look at the hard numbers between the two, and you carve out what happened during the COVID year.
Right.
What do you want to call it? Which most voters have. They have all carved that out and said that's a unique anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take a look at the two side by side, you know, tell me, were you better off under which administration? And the vast majority of people clearly say that we were better off under Donald Trump's administration.
No, they do. And I think that when you really look at it, it comes down to the pocketbook. This election is coming down to a pocketbook. They generally do, but, you know, you hear a lot of outside issues, this, that, and the other thing. But I think America right now is saying, can I afford a Harris administration? I'm pretty sure, you know, one thing, this is what I believe in, and I'll wrap this into the what we're talking about. I like to day trade. And I firmly believe...
You're better than I am.
I firmly believe that every reaction is an overreaction, good or bad.
Yeah.
So what you'll see, I think, with the economy, it we've seen it with Biden, and we've seen it with Trump. When Trump came in, I'm going to bring jobs back. The oil's going to be flowing, et cetera, et cetera. So just the fact that he was elected, you saw it on the border.
Sure.
The fact that he was elected, every reaction is an overreaction. He hadn't even done much yet, but they're like, here he is. Here's Superman. He's coming to save us. And here's Biden. And he's going to get rid of all this stuff. I'm going to shut down the pipeline. I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. You see an overreaction, and it's really, you used to see it more on the stock market, but it's trickling down, and it has major results on Main Street now. And people, I think, are realizing that to some effect, and they realize that, you know, if I wanted my dollar to go further, if I want to put more gas in my car, there could be almost an immediate effect the day he's elected.
Absolutely. And that's where, you know, Donald Trump has, is Donald Trump the most polished politician that has ever ran for office? with And the irony of that question is that I have talked to my most ardent Donald Trump supporters out there. A lot of them are ridiculously good friends of mine. And even they, when I propose that question to them, they roll their eyes and go, okay, I'll give you that. This guy's not the most polished guy in the world. And in a lot of respects, I wish somebody would take away what used to be his Twitter account. Somebody take away his smartphone. Live like Randall Jordan, okay? Randall Jordan, go to the White House. Go train this guy. Get rid of your smartphone for 1 second. Get him off these social media accounts for 1 second, and just kind of level everything out. And they'll admit to that. It can be grating to a lot of people, including me. But people have parsed all this out, and they've said very simply, where have we been better? Between the two administrations. And then you have Kamala Harris, who in one breath said, and it's maybe not an exact quote, but would you do anything differently than Joe Biden? And she said, no. And now she's trying to come back and say, well, here are the things I would do differently. And the question becomes, what would you have done differently than Joe Biden? And she has struggled with that.
Right.
And it's always struck me as odd.
And I think, I don't see the struggle too much just because, I mean, she is struggling. I'm not degrading that. What I'm saying is, Biden was supposed to be kind of a Bush, Bush Jr. He was going to be a uniter, and he wasn't.
Right.
He was more progressive than people thought he was. I would have never guessed some of the stuff he did, he would have done. But then again, you always kind of wonder with, possibly senility, et cetera, was he the one making all these decisions, or was he just signing off on them?
I couldn't tell you, but I agree, yeah.
And so he didn't run the country the way I expected him to. I don't think he ran the country the way, he has a lot of years of public service.
Sure, yeah.
And he was different in this presidency, I think, than he ever was in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was more like Harris. Harris is very... more on the progressive side, and I know people argue with me, like the true progressive that's sitting in the yard right now,
the
stereotype. I think maybe she's right. She wouldn't have changed much. But we'll be right back with Protecting What's Matter. What matters? I can't speak today for some reason.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Former President Trump campaigning in the most populous swing state today, making two stops in Pennsylvania. Fox's Brian Yenis is there.
The Trump campaign here in Pennsylvania is feeling very confident about its ground game here and their get out the vote strategy. And that's because... Well, for instance, here in Bucks County, the largest swing county in Pennsylvania, there are now more registered Republicans than there are Democrats.
Vice President Harris will be speaking from the Ellipse near the White House this evening, the same spot where Trump spoke ahead of the January 6th riot nearly 4 years ago. There are concerns about election-related unrest in Washington ahead of the November 5th election.
We will be working closely with all of our partners to monitor events on election night and the days that follow.
D.C. Police Chief Pamela Smith, America is listening to Fox News.
Sometimes it's what you've been waiting for, and sometimes it's unexpected. You're pregnant. Tree of Life Pregnancy Care Center is here to help. Services include pregnancy tests and ultrasounds, maternity and baby items, post-abortion support, and lots of helpful information. It's all confidential, and it's all free. There's a Tree of Life in San Luis Obispo, Atascadero, and Paso Robles. Visit our website at treeoflifepsc.com or call us at 805-543-6000. That's 805-543-6000. Tree of Life.
And we're back with Protecting What Matters. This is Eric Gorm. Barry is out today. He's having a little, I don't know what he's doing, but I imagine he's on a beach with a tropical drink.
Yes.
And,
yes.
just waiting for election results to come in next week. And, you know, you got to start a week early. And
Barry sent me a text message. On, yeah.
You know, he's probably on, you know, yeah, out in the Caribbean.
He didn't send it to Randall because Randall doesn't have a smartphone. No, Randall does have a smartphone now. Yeah. Okay, now he has a smartphone. Okay, there you go.
Let's grab a couple calls real quick. Good afternoon. Thank you for calling into Protection What Matters.
Hey, Eric. Hey, this is Maria, by the way. I just wanted to let
For the Republic?
No. I'm sorry?
For the Republic?
Yeah. Thanks, Eric.
Wow. Poor Maria.
You know, I try and go stealth, and you just blew my, cover. Anyways, I just want to really encourage people to do what you can to come out and vote. You know, I'm a proponent of voting on Election Day in the precinct because of the precinct ballot is counted that night and goes through less scrutiny than the mail-in ballots. So I'm just going to put that out there. If anybody knows how to get a hold of me, they can ask me more information as to why I'm a proponent of voting in precinct. But second, I also just want to encourage people to this is such an important election, obviously, but besides the fact that we need to get Trump in office, but really you need to get out the vote because of the local issues that are affecting you every day. You know, these are people that are going to be serving us to address issues like potholes, infrastructure, what is being allowed in our school libraries. And so I really want to encourage people just to minimally vote because of the people that you need to get in office that are affecting your daily life.
No, I think you're right. Just to go a little more into that, I think people get caught up in state and federal issues that they don't have a lot to say about, you know. And but you do have your school board. You can have a huge voice in your city council. You can have a huge voice in. You want to get involved with county government, you go to the Board of Supervisors. You can have a voice that matters more than you're going to have on any state and local issue or state and federal issue. Excuse me. So what's your second thing?
Well, my second thing is you now I've lost my train of thought, so I now have to come up with the third thing. So no, I'm teasing. No, I do want to encourage folks that there are some events coming up. And really, it's such a morale booster. If you've never been to these events that I'm going to talk about, get out and at least do one, because minimally what it does is it makes your tribe bigger. You get to know people that think like you. It gives you strength. It gives you encouragement. It gives you true joy, not the joy that Kamala Harris talks about. That's
fair. Oh, my God, yes.
All that to say, here are some events that we would love for patriots to get out, encourage people to vote. There's an event this Saturday. It is the last San Luis Obispo County Trump train, and it's November 2nd.
Okay.
And it will start at 1 o'clock Saturday, starting in Paso, and it will go through the county. The route maps will not be released until you register.
So you would have to go to
Slow Train, that's S-L-O Train 2024.com, slowtrain2024.com. Get in and register now, and just go join the fun. You know, it's just been so heavy lately. This is really a morale booster, and you'll just have a blast doing it. So, and it encourages folks to get out and vote. So that. And then on Monday the 4th, the day before the election, is what's called the MAGA California Takeover. And that is basically getting on bridges through the counties, but the whole state is doing this. Each county has their locations that they will be covering from 4 to 6 on your bridges, street corners, with your flags and your signs, encouraging, again, folks to get out and vote. Another opportunity to meet people to make your tribe bigger. But that is can I give the list of the locations in Slo County? I do have a Santa Barbara County, but I know.
Maybe quickly. We have a few more callers coming in. So, yeah.
Named off. Okay, so in Paso Robles, we'll start north to south. Paso Robles on the Niblick Bridge from 4 to 6. Templeton on the Vineyard Drive overpass. 4 to 6. Atascadero, Santa Rosa Road. San Luis Obispo will be Madonna Road. Avila Beach will be Avila Beach Drive and First Street. That'll be a fun corner. Aurora Grande is Oak Park Boulevard overpass, and Napomo is Teff Street.
All right.
So we'd love to see everybody out there.
Well, we appreciate it, Maria. Maria always knows what's going on and is out there organizing and taking charge. So we love you for that.
We love you too, Eric. Thank you so much. All right. God bless you guys. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Hey, Eric. How you doing?
Oh, hi, Michael. Good.
Hey.
Maybe we should have Maria sing for us. She's a pretty good singer.
I'll tell you what. I know she sings better than Eric does. So. Oh, there you go.
You know.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah,
too.
There you go. Right. Yeah.
Michael, I have a question for you.
Sure.
From your ancestry, because I know that you are a Salinan Indian, correct?
Sure, yes.
And your history is in this area. Uh-huh. my question is, when the Spanish came here, and I don't know if you know this off the top of your head.
Maybe.
Your people lived along the river, and they came in and did what they wanted to do. Did your people become subjects of the Spanish or the Mexicans, or were you still in, or were the Salinan Indians still the Salinan Indians?
Okay, let me do this real quick because it says nothing. I don't want to get off topic too much. You know, obviously the mission era began in 1769 with the Spanish mission era, and then and that began with the third mission of the 21 that was built was the San Antonio mission up in South Monterey. Then, of course, eventually the San Miguel mission was built in 1789, I believe it was, off the top of my head. And those two are primarily known as the two missions associated with the Salinan culture. Now, when they came into being, that's when the Indians that were living in the surrounding village were brought into those missions. Voluntarily or by force or a combination of both, they were brought into there until 1834, when Mexico secularized the missions, because Mexico broke away from Spain or got their independence from Spain in 1821. Now, that being prefaced a second, tell me exactly what your question was at that time. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm comparing this to Kamala Harris's heritage from Jamaica.
Oh, okay. It all comes together. Yes.
But my point is, my questions are related to our area, uh-huh. And as you guys were speaking earlier about her heritage being half Indian from India and half
I think, yeah,
Jamaican.
I believe so.
Yeah, Jamaican, I believe.
Yeah, her heritage is, her father was from Jamaica. Their ancestors owned slaves. Her mother was from India. They came in here on school visas to Berkeley. She was born in this country when her mother's visa was already expired, and she was supposed to leave 6 months before that.
I had no idea.
So forget about that for a minute. But I'm concerned. I'm not concerned. I'm more interested in your family history, comparatively speaking, as a Californian,
sure,
but one of the first Californians, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. what the Spanish did to you and what your people's rights are and stuff. And did you guys create a pueblo? Were you subjects of the Spanish government or the Mexican government, or were you the Salinan Indians that they were just abusing?
Okay, let me go through the quick history of this. After, when just so everybody understands this, after 1834, when Mexico secularized the missions, which meant that there was no more support for the mission system, and the Indians were basically lost at that point. And from 1834 to basically 1850, after the Mexican-American War, the Mexican government took in essence, the property up and down the mission area and divided it into what's known today as the Mexican land grants.
Yeah.
Okay, the land grant system we have today. And that's where the Indians along this, especially along the Spanish missions along the coastline, lost all of their property. By and large, in a real quick way. Now, and obviously they lost a lot of their property at San Antonio Mission through what was called the Milpitas Land Grant, which was a 46,000-acre fraudulent land grant as dictated by the Department of Interior in 1886, I believe it was, in their reports. From there, if you go up by the San Antonio Mission to about 10 miles northeast of that, there's an adobe out there where the Indians had to go settle at, which was known today as the Indians Ranch, Indians Adobe, the Encinales Adobe. And Eusebio Encinales, who founded that with the Encinales family up there, were all Indians from the mission, with Eusebio Encinales being my great-great-great-grandfather. And from there, that got lost because of financial reasons. They split out to the Bailon family, which was from their daughter Clara, who ended up, and the Bailons ended up down here in North County at a place called Toro Creek, located between Morbay and Atascadero. And that's where they were at. They lost their property in the early 1930s due to another land grant dispute called the Asuncion Land Grant. And the Asuncion Land Grant was part of the San Miguel Mission. They lost that property. And the Bailons, Antonio Bailon, who was one of the Indians up there, and my grandparents were all born on that Indian settlement. So they came from that, and it ended up down in Morro Bay because Antonio Bailon married Edward Pierce. And that was the Pierce family that ended up in Morro Bay starting the abalone business down there. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that in a nutshell, that's what took place with my particular family line and where that all took place. So,
right. And I appreciate it. And I read your byline, and I know you, well, I think you know who I am, and we've met numerous times.
Yeah.
And I was, these different people come into the community claiming different things, and I go back into the history and look at, just to give you an example, my dad came here from India.
Yeah.
My grandfather was the chief inspector general of the state of Punjab. He was decorated by the Queen of England.
Oh.
But my dad married a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl from California. And so, but I was born here in California. I don't think I'll ever leave. But I understand the history, and I just wanted to know a little bit more, of which we can talk at a later date on this, but a little bit more because of all the interjection of what everybody feels, their rights are. You and your family were born here.
Yeah.
We have a woman running for president that her mother was here on a school visa that wasn't supposed to be in the country at the time. Her visa was expired and then took her kids to Canada for so long, and then they come back here. And how do you run for president?
Right. I don't know.
Well, Greg, we got a few more calls to get to. So right, thank man. You, sir. We'll
All speak right, soon. Take care.
Good afternoon. Thank you for calling Protecting What Matters.
Hi, I have one quick question, and I'm going to take it off the air.
Okay.
They announced on the Morning Exchange that there's going to be major construction on Capistrano for the next 5-6 days, and I just wanted to know whether or not you might thought that was kind of a coincidence that they picked this last 5 days before the election to repave Capistrano with one way and all this, when in fact that particular building, being the polling place, is going to be busier, and the library busier than ever, and they chose this week to do it. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
You know what? I couldn't factually answer that, because I mean, obviously, neither. You know, we can't answer. You know, I can't read somebody's mind.
Right.
I'm not clairvoyant, but I think at best that was poor planning on somebody's part to not realize, hey, we're going to be repaving these streets. Now, in fairness, whenever government agencies do, you know, infrastructure projects, you know, these are projects that are planned, you know, way in advance.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, take a long time to come to fruition, but nobody bothered to coordinate with, hey, by the way, when we do all this is going on during election season. Do we have an idea? Can we contact the county and figure out where the polling areas are going to be?
Right.
You know, yeah. And or is this going to create a problem for this? I tend to be one of those people that believe that, honest mistakes and honest mix-ups can take place at this point, but I've been proven wrong.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times it's Murphy's Law too.
Yeah.
I
tend to look at everything as, okay, in this case, I'll give everybody the benefit of the doubt and say that was just a long-term planning mix-up. And in the future, when you do road things during election seasons, kind of contact the county and kind of, hey, where's all the polling places going to be this fall? So we can kind of, you know, get this situated and everything.
So how are you feeling about the county and the city's local politics right now?
You know what? It's just as interesting as ever.
Right.
I know that, you know, I live down in Morro Bay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the politics going on down there, obviously the big fights going on down there have to do with the, you know, the former PG&E power plant, the three stacks.
Yeah, yeah. It seems a little deceiving what's on the ballot. Everybody's, it's, you know, all about local control no matter how you vote on certain things.
Yeah, and you know, the caller that came in before, you know, talking about the importance of voting, that is so true. You know, and I've always told people that have thrown away their ballots. And I've had friends of mine, they get a ballot and they just throw it away. And I said, why? Right. Well, I don't have time to read all the, you know, different propositions and everything. I said, well, that's fine, but
you don't have to mark them.
Yeah. You don't have to mark everything on there. I mean, even if you only know two things on there,
you're better off. If you're not going to educate yourself, just skip that one.
And here's another one too, that most people don't realize is that even if you don't know anything on the ballot, little trick, it doesn't mean you can't submit it.
Right.
Because what you want more than anything is you want to tell your elected officials and people involved that you do vote. You could leave the whole ballot blank.
Right.
You know, and not vote for anything. But still send it in and leave the whole thing blank so that way it's counted that you do vote.
Yeah, when I look you up on GOP data, I can
You can stalk me and see what I'm doing.
Like, Michael never votes.
Yeah, exactly.
He talks a good game, but good afternoon.
Hi. So I always am confused by people who say everybody should vote, because if you don't take the time to even look at the issues, I know you mentioned the propositions, but there's people that don't really even know anything about the candidate. Or when we have judges, that's hard, but you just have to look a little bit harder. But there's people that don't even really know much about the presidential candidates, and I don't think people should vote in ignorance. So I don't think everybody should vote, and that's just my two cents. I'm just confused by people saying everybody should vote, blank statement, period. That's it. Thanks.
All righty, sir. And of course, they can't hear us when they're on hold. I think we were just kind of going over
what
he was asking, but he can't hear this conversation on hold here.
Yeah, and I think the biggest issue, and he brings up, is that, you know, you want to make sure that you're an educated voter in all of this.
Right.
But, you know, like we were talking about, it doesn't mean you have to vote for everything on the ballot. If you honestly don't know the candidates running for, you know, judge, and judge is always a hard one to vote for.
Right.
Because we all look at it and go, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I have no idea who these people are. Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
But that guy that I was guilty on that speeding
ticket. Right, exactly. You know, and so you look at these people and you think, okay, but to piggyback on what he was saying, you know, I still believe people should vote. Giving a counter view to this whole thing, if you don't know everything on the ballot, you don't have to vote for it. Don't randomly vote. Vote educated.
And you should. I mean, there's so many propositions that are, if you just read the, you know, three sentences, in California, it's so misrepresented anymore.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. If you look at Prop 5, which is basically to weaken Prop 13.
Yes.
That's not how it comes off when you read it.
No.
Unless you read the whole thing and you kind of see, you know, they're trying to get rid of that 66%, right?
I think it is. Yeah.
And make it 55%.
I believe so.
Well, it's a lot easier to raise taxes at 55% than it is at 66.
I know the other one that was on there off the top of my head was 36.
36.
Was that the one, the felonies?
Felonies. And then 34 would be, you know, it looks really good to me. Oh, you want to fix Medicare and make it out of the general, take it, you know, the money out of the general fund, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, they piggyback that it gives the illegals free insurance forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And actually, the Republican Party, we were originally, the executive committee was looking at like, oh, this 34 looks great. And then we read a little farther into it, and it's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, it gives millions of people free insurance.
And it happens all the time when it comes to voters. So I think the last caller, you know, hit a really good point there.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, when you vote, educate yourself. Right. Really take the time to understand what's going on with everything. Well, hear music.
Yeah. No.
Wait, you got to sing for us.
Oh, I don't know this song. That's the problem. I'm probably not as good as Greg's actually a pretty good singer.
He is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not trying to compete with Greg, but we will be right back for the last segment.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with stocks ending mixed as investors digested more earnings reports and await results from tech heavyweights. Tech gained today, boosting the tech-heavy NASDAQ, which posted a new record closing high, while energy lagged. JetBlue Airways stock tumbled 17%. The carrier posted better-than-expected earnings but forecast declining revenue for the current quarter. Shares of VF Corporation surged 25%. The company owns brands like Vans, North Face, and Timberland and reported second quarter earnings and revenue that beat expectations. The Dow winners today, Boeing, Microsoft, and Salesforce. The Dow decliners, Home Depot, Caterpillar, and Travelers. The Dow down 155 points. The Nasdaq higher by 146. S&P 500 up 9. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
With Cybersecurity Awareness Month winding down, LifeLock wants to remind you to update your software. These updates are used to patch up security issues that identity thieves can exploit to gain access to your personal info. But for comprehensive identity theft protection, there's LifeLock. LifeLock alerts you to more uses of your personal info and fixes identity theft issues that arise. Start your 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use my name as your promo code, Clay.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers.
Hey there, glad you could make it. Come on in.
Wow, your kitchen looks amazing. So does your whole house.
Thanks. We just had our cabinets refinished by Peak Painting. They did such a fantastic job, we had them come back and paint our whole living area.
I guess you could say they have your stamp of approval.
Yes, sir. Just like everyone else on Google and Yelp. Booking a quote is easy. Just go to peakpainting.com. That's peekpainting.com. And book a time and day that fits your schedule. No back and forth phone tag. Just click and book.
Sounds too easy.
Hi, I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Ryan Peek.
And we're the Peek Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peek Painting at peekpainting.com.
And we are back with Protecting What Matters, and it goes by quick, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Yeah, we got a little bit more time. So if you want to call in, give us a call, 238-5775, 238-KPRL. We can maybe answer some questions or hear where you're at. You know, one of the things I find amazing, I was talking to Randall a little bit about this, but as soon as the ballots dropped in this county, Republican headquarters went crazy. It's been crazy that we're getting 200 to 300 ballots a day.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from people working up there at the Republican headquarters that they've never seen anything like that. This is more than 16 and 20.
Oh, it is. Yeah. And you know, I was telling Randall, I kind of attribute it to the assassination attempt where people said, "Enough is enough. I support this man. I'm going to let it."
Exactly. Yeah.
And good afternoon.
Hi. Yeah, I'm the guy who just called about being a voter who knows the issues a little bit.
Sure.
But I just wanted to add, I'm sorry, I guess I didn't get it all out. The one thing that I do, especially with the propositions, it's just so hard because they're just liars on everything. So I just, frankly, I go to people I trust. And I trust Tom McClintock. He's, to me, he's a Reagan Republican. He's even more conservative than the state Republican Party. And I go to his website every year. He and his staff look up all the propositions. And I can look at his, you know, I look him up and I see what they say about the propositions. And I vote pretty much what they say, what he says, because I trust him. And then Dan Dow on Prop 36, he's a local guy. I really trust him. great district attorney. He said yes on 36 to start putting criminals back in jail. Mm-hmm. And that's how you do it, because we can't all figure it all out. We don't have the time or even the knowledge in some cases. And just that's just something I'd encourage people to do. Find someone you trust, and you can rely on them a little bit.
Yeah, and what I found interesting this year, RPSLO, the county here, the Republican Party here in our county, when I looked at the proposition endorsements, they were between the Democrat, they were 100% opposite.
Really?
Across the board, we didn't agree on one thing. We basically said 34 and 36 were yeses, and the rest were all no. The Dems said complete opposite. Yeah.
And I don't mean to stay focused on 36 for one second, but so, that really surprised me how anybody could vote against that.
Right.
Yeah, and I pretty much agreed with that. But McClintock had even no on 34. And the interesting was he said, you know, they wouldn't be bothered to death if 34 went yes. But they said 34 needs to be overturned, but not the way they're doing it. Hmm. There were some problems with the way they went about it. And I liked how what he said about it. Apparently, I don't have time to get into the details.
Right.
But if you go to McClintock's website, you can look it up. Even if you guys want to, just out of curiosity, why he's different than what I received in the mailers from my Republican Party. And I went with the, you know, I'm very traditional and conservative. And right. I just voted down the line what he said, and I read it, too. I didn't just look at what he wrote. I mean, what he said to vote. I read about why. And they do a really good job of making it concise and quick so you can get a handle on it.
And there are a lot of resources, and it's finding the one you trust, and it sounds like you did.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks. All right. So, yeah, and actually, there was kind of a confusion this year because the local slate went out the same day as the state slate, mm-hmm. or within a day.
Sure.
Some people got it the same day. Some people got it, and it was 35.
Interesting.
The state said, yep, we support it, vote yes. Locally, we said no.
Interesting.
And actually, there was a couple we disagreed on, and interestingly enough, the state was going to give out door hangers to every central committee.
Right.
They canceled it because the central committees did not agree with the state.
Well, and you know, and I think that's a good thing, you know, personally, that because it's showing that your local boards are definitely thinking in terms of being independent minded.
Let's try to grab one more call before we're out of here. Good afternoon. I don't know. I think we're jammed up. I think it didn't drop, actually.
Huh.
So it's not live, but it didn't drop for some reason. So we can keep going.
Okay. Here. Yeah. But, you know, that's something interesting when it comes to the Republican Party, especially here in California. You do have a lot of very independent thinking central committees
right.
up and down the state. And it's interesting when you go visit the different counties and mm-hmm. talk to them and have lunch with them. It's amazing the diverse point of view that you have in all these groups. And how they come in there and say, you know, I'm really frustrated with the state party over here.
Oh, yeah. Well, the state is way more towards the middle, I think, than most of the counties.
And in some respects, I kind of can see why, you know, in a state like this.
No, for sure. And I think it'll be interesting. I think March, is it March? Because the state elections are coming up next year. And that'll be interesting because I know Jessica, she actually technically termed out before, but now she's termed out. There's somebody else. There's two people running,
mm-hmm.
and one is, I think, a handpick from Jessica, and one's a little more hardcore to the right, and we'll see what happens.
Interesting. Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting one to see how that plays out. I know I was there at the state convention in which she got elected, and that was really exciting because I was sitting next to her just a couple of seats down from her parents and her family, and they were just thrilled over it to watch her do this.
So, yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see where, because that'll be kind of heading where the state goes. Is it going to stay more moderate? Is it going to veer a little more to the right? I know it'll just be interesting.
And California is a tough state to be Republican.
There's no question.
Right? I mean, there's no question about that. But it's a tough state to be Republican in.
All right. Well, we have a few seconds. Anything you want to leave with here?
Yeah. Get out and vote. Two, Trump's going to win. If he doesn't, I will come on this with Barry and throw my cell phone into the ocean.
And remember, 6 o'clock at the Republican headquarters, there will be a watch party next Tuesday.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Temple.